Welcome to the Motley Fool Radio Show. I'm David Gardner, broadcasting from Fool Global Headquarters here in Alexandria, Virginia. For the last 4-plus years, we've had the privilege of bringing you this show each week. This is our final show on NPR. It's been a tremendous experience, and the Motley Fool will continue its many offerings. Our website, our newsletters, our newspaper column, and our weekly NPR Profiles podcast, and will continue to be active in the world of radio. On this week's show, we're going to take a look back at some of our favorite interviews over 4 years. Those will include Billie Jean King, George Foreman, and Don Ho. We begin our trip down Fool Radio Memory Lane with our 2002 interview with musician and humanitarian Bob Geldof.
It's not often that a couple of fools get to talk with a knight, and so we're excited to have a few minutes with musician and humanitarian Sir Bob Geldof, the man behind that song, I Don't Like Mondays.
Bob Geldof was the leader of the Boomtown Rats, a rock group that he formed back in Dublin in 1975. He was the organizer behind Band Aid and Live Aid, efforts by musicians to fight starvation in Africa.
And Dave, that song, Feed the World, remember that one?
Very
popular song. That was Bob Geldof.
And he's got a few business interests as well that might surprise you. He continues to be outspoken on a number of causes and continues to perform.
His most recent album is entitled Sex, Age, and Death. He joins us from New York City. Bob Geldof, welcome to the Motley Fool Radio Show.
Thank you.
Bob, tell us a little bit about growing up in Dublin. Tell us about the role of business and money in your childhood.
That's an easy question. There was no money because there was no business. My dad was a commercial traveler. He went around the countryside of Ireland selling towels and carpets. Mm-hmm. And Ireland in those years was a very poor country. There was two outlets, really, to you when you left school. You could become part of the civil service, which required fluent Irish, so that sort of left out 98% of the population. Mm-hmm. Or there was agriculture, which was the main economic motor. And during my childhood, as I said, my dad didn't have money. My mum died when I was six. I sort of brought myself up, and as a result of that, I think, you know, learned to be independent very quickly. The downside of that is there was no one to temper my opinion. I would read things, formulate an opinion, and just believe that to be true. So hence my dogmatism, which, you know, often spoils a good argument.
Your career has been defined by your music, by some entrepreneurship, whether it's the hard business or the creative side of entrepreneurship, and by your social activism. And a lot of people, no doubt, associate you with Band Aid and Live Aid, fighting famine in Africa. What made Bob Geldof decide that he wanted to be about something bigger than music? And let me say, you don't have to refer to yourself in the third person when you answer the question. Since that's usually a signal of something gone very wrong with someone's personality.
I actually usually refer to myself in the royal first person singular, the we, you know. And again, I go back to where we started off. Because I was bringing myself up, there was no one to make me do homework, so I just tuned into the one rock and roll station that existed in Europe. It was called Radio Luxembourg. And I just read books that interested me. And then I'd go out at night and stay out all night with this group called the Simon Community, who would just, they would collect free bread and vegetables from the greengrocers and bakers in Dublin, and they'd make soup and give it out to the homeless and the hookers and and I thought that was cool. And I also, it was the 60s, so rock music was inextricably bound up with the political moment. So that's the way I was inclined, and largely because pop was about that then. So I always saw pop and political things being one and the same animal. So when the Rats started, it was 76. Now, that's significant in our, it was 75, actually, because a significant moment happened then. The population of Ireland, 50% became under 25. And that was truly significant from an Irish perspective. That was the end of the old, cosy, Joycean Ireland, because these young people had had enough. And we just happened to be the irascible, impatient, articulating voices of that new Ireland. Mm. That's what happened to us. It wasn't planned, but that's what happened. Mm. And there were some kids like Bono came to see us and things like that. And so this whole new Ireland was beginning then.
Do you consider the Boomtown Rats the best business organization that you started, the most successful?
No, not at all. I mean, in terms of where I made a lot of money was in production companies. I don't know if you know the show Survivor.
Mm-hmm. We've heard of that one.
Well, I own that. We started that with our production company, Planet 24.
Mm.
And I sold that to a major independent production company in the UK. We made a lot of money, but we retained the rights to Survivor because we thought it would be a hit one day.
Do you watch the show?
I've seen it 3 or 4 times, yeah.
Bob, we want to ask you, throughout your career now, looking back, what would you highlight as the smartest and the dumbest investment that you've ever made?
I've never played the market. I don't understand it. I used to maybe take a punt on horses when I was in school. It's a sort of Irish pastime, so everyone does it. But I'd always bet a shilling each way. You know, I'm very safe, and I'd study form just like stockbrokers do, and I'd know the rider, and I'd get a tip just like stockbrokers do that this horse is going to do it. You know, but boy, how many times did I lose that shilling? You know, and I used to listen to my Spanish teacher, Father Kilbride, because he'd put like Spanish. We're not going to do Spanish today because I had a great tip on the Aintree at 3 o'clock. And he said, get out your pencils. And we'd all get out our pencils, write down flying target at the 3 o'clock at 30 to 1. If it goes to 20 to 1, don't bet. And like, so we'd all be 13 and we'd all steam down to the bookies and we'd put our shilling on flying target. And Kilbride always got it right. I mean, if he told me to bet on a company, I'd bet it. But I can guarantee you he'd never have told me to bet on Enron.
Okay, and let's close, as we do every Motley Fool Radio Show interview, with our buy-seller-hold segment, where we're just going to ask you, Bob, a number of things happening in our society today, and ask you, if this person, place, or thing was a stock, would you be buying that stock, selling it, or holding on to it, and maybe a sentence or two about why? And the first one, it's a fun game. The first one we want to try out here is the future of Britney Spears.
Buy.
And why?
My kids love her. They're still 11 and 13. They've got a long way to go.
Buy, sell, or hold the cleanup of corporate corruption in America.
I'd hold. I think they'd certainly initiate new laws. I think Greenspan's speech, as ever, was brilliant the other day. A very precise articulation of the problem. I don't think you'll ever stop infectious greed, which was his great words, because it stems from his other great expression, irrational exuberance. Mm.
Okay, last one up. Bob Geldof, buy, sell, or hold the idea that world hunger might end in the next 20 years.
Sell.
Why?
Because we know it's happening. We know what we have to do to stop it. It's eminently stoppable, but we're not doing it. And I don't know why. I really don't know why.
Musician and humanitarian, Sir Bob Geldof, thanks for joining us on the Motley Fool Radio Show.
Thanks, guys.